From WBUR in Boston, it's Weekly Warm-Up, a sampling of the cornucopia of stories and interviews featured on Only a Game, sports public radio style.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new 240-horsepower turbocharged Acura RDX. More at acura.com/RDX.
Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
I'm Bill Littlefield. Coming up on Only a Game, style triumphs over substance in Los Angeles. Go figure. But first, I'm joined by Charlie Pierce for a look at the week's news. Hello, Charlie.
Hi, Bill.
On Wednesday, the IOC awarded the 2014 Winter Olympics to Sochi. And Sochi is where exactly?
It's on the Black Sea in Russia. And its name is so darling that for the first time an Olympics is going to be able to name a mascot after
the town.
Little
Fantastic.
Sochi, the bear, I guarantee it.
Perfect.
My favorite reaction came from the bid chief, Dmitry Chernchenko, who says that it was a historic decision for all countries. I'm sure in Tonga, they're like, yeah, we get to go to Sochi for the Winter Olympics.
Nobody's going to work
there. I was
there.
All over Trinidad and Tobago. Yeah, man, we go to Black Sea.
The Tour de France is just now getting underway. Charlie, are you looking forward to 3 weeks of inspiring stories of superbly conditioned athletes battling adversity as they achieve their life's goals and dreams?
Yes, because as I always do this time of year, I've sat alone in a windowless room cramming for my biochemistry final, which will take place over the next 3 weeks.
NBA free agent Grant Hill will not retire. He'll play next year for the Phoenix Suns or not play. Which do you think it'll be?
I think he'll play some. This is a dive for the ring. Phoenix knows the window's closing. Grant Hill knows the window's closing on what should have been a better career than it was. If you need a reason to root for the Phoenix Suns next year, getting Grant Hill a ring is a worthwhile thing. I think he'll play a few games.
Talk to me of free agent acquisitions of various other basketball teams.
In a lot of ways, the most interesting personnel move, which sort of goes along with all the free agency, is that the Utah Jazz released Derek Fisher, who is taking time off to be with his daughter, who's severely ill, and was asked for and was granted his release from a 3-year, $21 million contract to be home with his daughter, to which we all say good on him and best of luck.
The Seattle Supersonics picked up a new coach to go along with their revamped roster. Will all be A-OK with PJ?
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's been a while. He is alleged to be good with young players. He was so good with young players at his last stop that one of them tried to strangle him.
Tried to kill him, yes.
It's a big step for Seattle. It's sort of a risk. They have prize 1A from the draft in Kevin Durant. They're revamping their lineup. Rashard Lewis went to Orlando as a free agent. This is a big step for both PJ Carlissimo and the franchise.
Jeremy Roenick, late of the Phoenix Coyotes, announced his retirement this week, though in this case, announced is perhaps the wrong word.
Every now and then a hockey player reminds you about what modest people they are. He announced his retirement by sending a text message to the Philadelphia Inquirer that read, "I'm retiring. Is that still news?" Yes, Jeremy, you're a 9-time All-Star. It's still news.
Turning to a sport that people are actually playing at this time of year, how do you like the run the Colorado Rockies enjoyed against the New York Mets this week?
Well, this is terrific. This is one of those baseball things that I actually enjoy talking about. For the first time in more than a half century, a team went into New York and swept two New York teams, which obviously you couldn't do after the departure of the Dodgers and the Giants and prior to the beginning of interleague play.
Right.
But the Rockies went in and after swept the Yankees and swept the Mets, including beating them last time 17-7. The Mets are struggling a little bit. The Rockies had 20 hits. It really is a nice little bit of historical oddity.
One other necessity to that, besides the Dodgers and Giants being in the same place at the same time, you have to have the Yankees being really lousy.
That's right. That's another thing that wasn't common in baseball history.
Rain has delayed a lot of the tennis matches at Wimbledon. Charlie, I'm sure you're shocked. But anyway, that perhaps explains why some of the players there have had time to engage in various other activities, the production of a cookbook, for example.
Yes, love food. So that if all else fails, they said they can be a celebrity chef. Serena Williams apparently makes carrot cake. Maria Sharapova is a great fan of chocolate fondant, which I'm not sure what that is. Is that fondue with more muscular ingredients? I have no idea. But yes, they are putting out a cookbook, and they all say it's a great way to relax. So good for them, because they've had a lot of time on their hands.
This week, Rodney Marsh, an Englishman who played for the Tampa Bay Rowdies in the days of the North American Soccer League during the 70s, said that David Beckham's life in the U.S., quote, would be hell.
Hell.
Where exactly does hell come into that equation?
Well, I don't know. Probably somewhere in New Jersey, I would guess. Oh, see, now there was no reason. Now we're going to get letters
and
stuff.
No, we don't. No.
That's terrible. Apparently, Rodney Marsh believes hell is a road trip. He points out that when you play in the top-level Spanish league or in the Premier Cup in England, you don't have to travel very far, which is true. They're not very big places. But he is apparently telling him that hell is having to go from Tampa to New England or someplace.
That's awful.
I think Rodney's definition of hell could use some expansion, but that's just me.
How many $1 million makes this sort of hell endurable, I wonder? And speaking...
What fresh and well-munerated hell is this?
And speaking of English football, the NFL has folded its European League. Is this a result of the league clearing the way for real National Football League games to be played in Europe, or just lack of interest on the part of the locals?
You know, the last World Bowl drew 48,000. It's not an oddity anymore. If they really did this to soften up Europe for real American football, it's softened. Now, I had no idea, for example, that this thing had been going on for 16 years. That's astonishing to me.
When we last spoke, you expressed surprise that the America's Cup races were in progress. How surprised are you that the fabled sailing nation of Switzerland has emerged victorious in that competition?
I don't even remember what the America's Cup looks like. As I recall, it looks something like a pitcher. But Alinghi had a photo finish over Team New Zealand. 1 second ahead to take the best of nine series 5-2. But, as far as I know, Dennis Connors finally got the zinc oxide off his nose, so maybe it's time for us to make another run at this thing.
And finally, Charlie, I leave to you the happy responsibility of welcoming lots and lots of new stations to the Only a Game family.
Yes, we have two new friends in Missouri, in Maryville and Chillicothe. We are all over Idaho, where I am proud to say we are broadcasting to the fans of the defending Tostitos Fiesta Bowl champion, Boise State, who gave us the most exciting bowl game in many years. And in Nevada, Bill, what have we done?
Well...
We've hit what?
We have hit the, wait for it.
Yes, sir. We've hit the jackpot.
Nevada.
Excellent, which is where you go when Laughlin isn't enough of a challenge.
Charlie Pierce writes for the Boston Sunday Globe magazine. He joins me each week at this time on Only a Game. Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks, Bill.
A list of the most memorable rock and roll pseudonyms includes Polystyrene, Captain Sensible, Epic Soundtracks, Poison Ivy, Cheetah Chrome, Klaus Fluoride, and He Who Cannot Be Named. Recently, Only a Game's Charlie Schroeder attended an event that featured competitors boasting great aliases and gripping ersatz rock guitar moves, and he has this real report.
It's a pleasant June evening on Los Angeles' Sunset Strip. But inside the Key Club's stuffy, cramped green room, it's a different story. The 16 contestants in tonight's air guitar competition are assembled for a brief pre-show rules school, and the heat is causing one of them to undergo a serious wardrobe malfunction.
You're having some spirit gum issues in your mustache.
Yeah.
Too much perspiration on your upper lip.
I was sniffing more than I was putting on my face.
That's expert Grindstein, the alter ego of a Fresno physical therapist named Tom. He fashioned his character as a kind of homage to industrial rock and Albert Einstein, replete with a lab coat, 9-inch nails t-shirt, and that fake bushy mustache that just doesn't want to stay on his sweaty upper lip.
It's brutal. The air guitarist with no air? How can this be? This is not good.
Tonight's competition is the last in a 14-city tour put on by U.S. Air Guitar, which, believe it or not, is the official Air Guitar Association of the United States. The organization was founded in 2003 by Kristen Rucker and Cedric Devitt after the two heard about the World Air Guitar Championships held each year in Finland.
Chris and I have always sort of been hugely into air guitar and absurd competitions and sort of fringe competitions and the like. And whilst we sort of were laughing about this World Air Guitar Championships, we realized that America had never entered it. And we sort of figured, well, that's absurd. How can you have a world anything and not have America be involved in it?
According to Devitt, an expat Irishman who once competed in the World Championships as Aer Lingus, the number of U.S. regional contests has doubled each year since the competition's inception. This year, the tour kicked off in early June at Washington's 930 Club and concludes tonight at the Key Club, L.A.'s heavy metal landmark. Each event, including next month's U.S. Finals in New York, is emceed by Dan Crane, a.k.a. Bjorn to Rock, the Susan Lucci of air guitar, who has 5 second-place finishes to his credit.
It's a strangely addictive art form and a sport. I mean, it's a sport, you know. It's like you give a kid a football, and he goes out, and he just won't put it down. It's kind of like you give a guy an air guitar, that was me. You know, I could not put my air guitar down. And you kind of keep getting close to winning. You know, you really just, you smell the victory, the air is in your bloodstream, and you can't stop.
Last year, Crane and his alter ego wrote a book about his experiences called To Air as Human, subtitled One Man's Quest to Become the World's Greatest Air Guitarist.
And it speaks to the idea of anyone giving up their job, sacrificing their girlfriend or their home life or all of the things that they're invested in to pursue a dream, no matter how ridiculous, absurd, or invisible that dream might be.
With the obligatory velvet rope keeping the 100 or so patrons in place outside, I take a few minutes to find out why people have come out to watch someone act like they're playing a guitar. Many tell me they've seen the recent documentary Air Guitar Nation. Some are here to root on their coworkers. Others, like these guys, are here to support their friends.
My best friend and I came all the way from Arizona to come watch him compete today.
Are you serious?
Yeah, 6.5 hours this morning.
Back inside, tonight's contestants, many of whom seem better suited for a Halloween party than an air guitar competition, are readying themselves for their 60-second performance, which, according to last year's U.S. champ, Hot Licks Houlihan, better be big if they want to rock the house.
You don't have the properties of a real guitar holding you down and limiting you. Like, your neck can be 3 feet long. Use the whole thing, you know. Use your tongue, use your face, everything. Just make it big so the people in the back can, like, feel what's going on, you know.
There's been no shortage of risky moves on the nationwide talent search. Some have paid off. Bjorn Turok remembers one for whom that wasn't the case.
A guy in Minneapolis jumped off a drum riser onto the stage and broke both of his legs. It's a dangerous sport, you know, and others have gotten whiplash. I know a guy a couple years ago shattered his ankles by jumping off a bar. People get crazy and they want to impress. You know, I know tonight someone's going to climb up on top of these monitors over here to my left, and they'll jump off of them. Maybe they'll do a stage dive from up there, and it's, you know, it's a risky business.
Not a good idea.
For some contestants, however, the adage, no pain, no gain, might be just what the doctor ordered.
At age 43, I have a sciatic nerve that flares up. And I'm hoping that it does, because that would be conducive to the theme of...
That's George Hunter, a madness, a plumbing supply warehouse employee. He's sporting an 80s styles big hair wig and claims he was born for air guitar.
Oh, gosh, it's who I am. It is so who I am. I mean, if I'm feeling good, I might just break into it. It's a form of dance. It really is. You know, you're dancing with your hands and your head and your tongue and everything.
My name is Bjorn Turok. I will be your master of ceremonies this evening.
Bjorn Turok is on stage warming up the 500 or so patrons by tossing a couple dozen large red foam hands toward their outstretched arms. The foam hands are similar to the ones you see at college basketball games, but these are formed with index and pinky fingers raised into the sign of the devil. As Turok warms up the crowd, a panel of three judges sits in a bar booth cum dais. Think beer-soaked American Idol. From there, the three will evaluate the air guitarists using a system modeled after Olympic figure skating. Scores range from 4.0 to 6.0, and the panel considers technical merit, performance, and, according to Bjorn Turok...
The last criteria is airness, okay? Airness is when your performance transcends the imitation of guitar playing and becomes an art form in and of itself. It's an incredible thing to see.
One by one, the performers flail around the stage as their song selections blare from the speakers. But with the exception of a couple unique performances, the crowd sees through the gimmicks. That is until the hometown favorite and 2005 U.S. Air Guitar Champion, Fatima Huang, a.k.a. the Rock Ness Monster, takes the stage. Stoic, waifish, and sporting the shoulder-length hair of a rock star, the Rock Ness Monster is dressed simply. No silly get-ups here, save the dozen or so strips of Mylar fringe that dangle off his forearms. In a move reminiscent of Miles Davis, Rock Ness walks upstage, turns his back to the audience, and tunes his air guitar. His movements are slow and precise, not mime quality necessarily, but specific enough to draw the audience in. He raises his hand and points to the sound booth. The guitar riff is slow at the beginning, but in seconds it and the Rock Ness Monster take flight. Literally. Like a possessed Cirque du Soleil performer, Rocknest darts stage left up onto a stack of amplifier cabinets and, in mid-flight, spins around, diving headfirst into a roll that takes him back to center stage. As time runs out, the diminutive Angelino dives into the crowd, sealing his fate as everyone's favorite air guitarist. Despite a worthy challenge from the risky business-esque Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, it's the Rocknest Monster's night. He outperforms the other finalists in the second round, punctuating his compulsory interpretation of Quiet Riot's mental health with a final rush that sends him standing shoeless on random audience members' shoulders. Later, I met the Rocknest Monster, face to face.
I'm really competitive, so that coupled with my art background, I really look at this as art and trying to really elevate the art form. I put everything on the line, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, then I do it really badly. But the two times I've done it, the crowd's been there with me, so I've been pretty lucky.
After the winners are announced, the competitors take part in an ensemble finale. As Bjorn to Rock, tonight's contestants, and a couple dozen audience members air jam on stage to Lynyrd Skynyrd's Freebird, the Rocknest Monster moves away from the front of the stage in the glare of the lights. Every now and then, as a drunken reveler dips down to play a chord, I catch a glimpse of him stoically staring out into the crowd. Perhaps he's already thinking ahead of the finals in New York, or maybe he's just reading the sign that's fixed on the Vicky Club's balcony. The one that reads, "No stage diving." For Only a Game, I'm Charlie Schroeder on Los Angeles' Sunset Strip.
On August 16th, the Rocknest Monster will vie with 13 other regional winners at New York City's Irving Plaza for the U.S. Air Guitar National Finals. The U.S. champion will fly to Oulu, Finland in September to represent the United States against a dozen other countries in the 12th annual World Air Guitar Championships. Richard DeBernardis, the organizer of the 109-mile El Tour de Tucson, has said that when his bicycle race is run in November, people are not going to be riding to be a Greg LeMond or a Lance. They'll ride without their heroes. Who can blame them? Among the winners of the last 11 editions of cycling's most famous race are Bjarne Riis, who confessed this week that he had doped, Jan Ullrich, whose former assistants have said they injected him with the illegal blood booster EPO, and Marco Pantani, who was kicked out of the Tour of Italy for an elevated red cell count a year after he won the Tour de France and who died of a cocaine overdose in 2004. Lance Armstrong says he never cheated, but charges of doping have dogged him for years. Meanwhile, less than a week ago, Jorg Jaksha, who has ridden for five different elite teams since 1997, acknowledged that he had enlisted the services of Spanish physician Eufemiano Fuentes in a blood doping scheme. In the story he sold to the German magazine Der Spiegel, Jaksha implied that Fuentes, whom he characterizes as a master of disguises, had clients throughout the cycling world. The real surprise would have been if, having finished first in the 2006 Tour, Floyd Landis had not been flagged as a doper. So enough. We've thrilled to astonishing performances like the one Floyd Landis turned in during last year's Tour and then seen them called into question one too many times. We're all for fairness, and Floyd Landis deserves all available hearings, arbitrations, and appeals. But however his case is resolved, the public can't be blamed for writing off the highest level of professional cycling as, at best, out of control, and at worst, corrupt beyond measure, a ridiculous circus in which the authorities can't police their sport, and about 40% of the competitors claim to be suffering from asthma so that they can legally use medications meant for that condition. So as the 2007 Tour rolls out of Great Britain and throughout France over the next couple of weeks, more power to it. May it be fast, exciting, and clean, and somebody call us when the event produces a winner whom everybody can celebrate now and when the final test results are in. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening to Only a Game. Please check your local listings for the NPR station nearest you to carry our show, and please visit our website, onlyagame.org.